you're listening to the oneofus.net podcast network.
God, oh God, we got a good show today, John.
Yeah,
because of one particular thing. We got the video.
Yeah,
my face is in the microphone.
Am I going to have to look at it occasionally to like make that sexual eye contact?
I mean, I guess so with our audience. Okay. You'll have to occasionally
when he's
do that.
Talking,
I mean, you're the sexy one. I'm the personality.
Okay.
That's just the way it is.
Okay.
You know, it's totally fine. No, it's good. We'll keep it that way. I like that way, you know?
I guess I'll take
that. Yeah, yeah. It's a compliment in a way. It's, think of it that.
Okay.
But, you know, before we get into the main topic today, we're going to go into the news
section. What is the main topic for today?
Bows and Arrows, because we've been playing a lot of video games of bows and arrows these past 2 weeks.
Horizon Zero Dawn and my dumb roommate bought a Switch. So we're playing Zelda 2.
But, I mean, that was a smart purchase, the Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what my money?
Maybe the system. Oh, that's true. So you were the smart one.
It was a smart decision on my part.
Yes, but before we get into this episode of We Are Air, one of us.net's premier video game podcast, we're going to go into the news section. We got some fun stories today, John. Now, as you said, you didn't buy that Switch.
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't. But a lot of people did. And apparently there's been some talk about some features that are missing. In an interview with the Washington Post, President and COO of Nintendo America, Reggie Fils-Aimé, addressed the Nintendo Switch's lack of web browser and streaming services. What I would say is this. We built the Nintendo Switch to be a world-class gaming device, meaning we want you first and foremost to play games on the system and have an incredibly fun experience. We're talking to a range of companies about other services, including companies like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, things that will come in time. In our view, these are not differentiators. What differentiates us is the way you play with the Nintendo Switch and what you can play, and that will continue to be our focus into the future as we continue driving this platform. Additionally, Nintendo revealed that the Switch has sold 313,000 units in Japan in its first 48 hours on sale, narrowly beating out the Wii U's 308,000 for the same period. Nintendo has also said that the Switch has replicated its record-breaking sales success in Europe. It added that The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild was the biggest-selling Nintendo launch title ever in Europe, even outselling Wii Sports in its first weekend of sales, which is pretty impressive because Wii Sports was bundled into the system at the time. Nintendo did not include any specific sales figures for either the Switch or Zelda in Europe. So they say that it did great, but we don't really.
No. Was Wii Sports a bundle in Europe? It was a bundle in North America. It wasn't a bundle in Japan.
Oh, that might be it. Yeah,
that might be different. And like,
because we're more important.
Yeah, and like, think about this. Would you have paid $50 for Wii Sports?
No, I would not.
No, I would never have done that because that would be dumb.
But you're going to pay $50 for one, two Switch.
No, I'm not fucking going to.
And those other games, the Milken game, when you do this all the time.
Oh, visual. Yeah,
visual, it is, yeah.
I actually did want to get that like at Redbox or something.
Yeah.
Because it was like, that's worth $3 for one night of jacking off.
Yeah, like exercises that aren't. Yeah,
and apparently there's another one where you eat a burrito. So just like.
Oh, is that?
Yeah.
Nintendo, how do they not know?
Nintendo getting you.
Oh, man. But the thing is that the big part of the story was that Reggie Fils-Aimé has said that, yeah, we're going to get those streaming services eventually. Not going to tell you when or if ever.
Because I don't think they know.
They don't.
They don't know how to do it.
They're in talks now.
Sometimes I think Nintendo doesn't really know how to do it.
No, I don't think so.
They haven't quite figured it out because this doesn't have an internet browser either.
That's the thing,
which is really weird.
The other two systems definitely do.
I understand like what they're going for is in like, this is a games console for games. That's what we want it to be. So like, that's a really good way to market it. But doesn't the 3DS also have an internet browser?
Yeah.
You can also watch Netflix on the 3DS, right?
I don't.
And that's strictly a game platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so.
So I don't know. You're bullshitting me, really. You're bullshitting me, Reggie. I can see it. I really think the console wasn't supposed to be out until December.
No.
But then when Microsoft announced that the Scorpio was going to be a thing, they were like, fuck.
We gotta do
something. Need an open window because that juggernaut of a console, which is basically a Windows PC
at this point,
is not going to bode well for the Switch.
Yeah.
So like, I understand why they had to put it out so soon. Hands-on time with it so far. It's very fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really do. It feels so video gamey. But I don't really know what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, I guess we just don't know at this point. I'm hopefully that they will have, you know, those streaming services like within the next like few months, and definitely like, you know, more games at that point.
Especially
too.
Since you're supposed to like bring it in, around and maybe like lie in bed and lie on the couch when other people are using the TV, perhaps.
Exactly.
So
I don't know. We shall see. So you're a fan of movies, John, right?
I mean, you know, not as much as video games.
But you're a fan of video games.
Yeah.
What about video game movies? Well, too bad. Film adaptation of Square Enix's Avalanche Studios' Just Cause video game series is moving forward with Jason Momoa. Cast is the movie's main protagonist, Rico Rodriguez. A little spice there.
I was offended by you trying to do that.
According to Deadline, San Andreas director Brad Peyton will helm and produce the film. Peyton and Momoa have worked together before on the Netflix series Frontier, which was created by Peyton. Peyton will begin, he will begin production on the video game movie adaptation for Rampage, which stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson, our future president, as we all know. Did not expect the Just Cause film, you know, especially because I don't think the video game has kind of, been in the cultural zeitgeist for all that long. Like, I enjoyed Just Cause 2. I never played 3. I never even played the first one, but I'm just kind of surprised that this would be. Oh, well, makes sense, though. Oh, no, it's now a Ubisoft product. Never mind. So, yeah, I don't understand why this is happening.
Can I get my joke out?
Yeah, go ahead for it.
Do you know why they're making this movie?
No.
Just Cause.
Oh, Jesus. Stop.
That was it. But yeah, I think I've played but an hour of the first one, and it's fun. Like, it doesn't.
For the original Xbox.
Yeah. And it, like, it's just a fun game. It's basically like playing GTA 4 multiplayer by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can see why they would choose this one to make a movie, because you just slap the title on there, do whatever you want, and people will go see it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that is the fun factor where you have like a grappling hook and you're able to shoot around and go on the planes and cars and pull people out. Like, that could be fun. I wonder if that's the direction you're going to go in with the movie, or are they going to go more like the original film or the original video game, where it's more like just an open world kind of GTA light. So
I don't think that's really like interesting, though. Did you ever see San Andreas?
I did.
Okay, and it's kind of goofy fun.
Oh,
right?
It's goofy.
I bet it's just that, but with more helicopters and more grappling hooks, not water, but trees.
That's true.
So
that's
probably exactly what it is.
I am excited for that now. Thank you. You convinced me. Yeah. Can't wait for this film. I'll blame you if it's bad. So we're getting a Voodoo Vince remaster. A remaster of Voodoo Vince will be released for the Xbox One and PC on April 18th. Microsoft and developer Beep Games have announced. Voodoo Vince launched back in 2003 for the original Xbox. This version of the game will feature updated visuals and run at 60 frames per second. The game will also be presented in a 16:9 aspect ratio. Along with being a Play Anywhere title for Xbox One, the Windows and Windows 10 users, Voodoo Vince Remaster will also be available through Steam. And I had this little quote in there for you, John, because that's one of the things that he says in the game. You think a guy made of cloth would stay lit?
Hey! Get it?
There's a lot of puns in Voodoo Vince. You ever played Voodoo Vince?
No, I'm very surprised you put this on the news topics, because I read it and I was like, am I supposed to know who this guy is?
Yeah, he's like a little stuffed voodoo doll who comes to life via zombie dust, and he must rescue his creator, who's been kidnapped by criminals.
Is this an Xbox One original?
An Xbox One original game, yeah. It's,
I do remember,
it's a platformer, 3D platformer.
I do remember a lot of those, you know, they were all very fun, like Blinks and
Brute Force.
What, Advent Rising? Was that an Xbox?
I don't remember. I think so.
That was fine. It's like early Mass Effect.
But Voodoo Vince, I didn't remember playing it, and it was fun. I won because this is another game that does take place in the bayou. Because that's the thing we were thinking of. Like, what other games take place in the bayou other than Resident Evil 7 and Mafia 3? Voodoo Vince. That's the one I forgot. But I like it because it has a nice aesthetic. It has a surprisingly, you know, fun, like, voice cast. I forget the guy who voices Vince, but he's a great delivery. All of his stuff is puns. It's like, it feels like it should have probably been on the PlayStation 2, because it was more at home on the system, because that was one. Well, it was for those types of games, because that's what the PS2 was all about. Those 3D platformers.
Yeah, the better genres. More enjoyable.
I had a lot of fun playing Knights of the Republic on the Xbox, and Elder Scrolls 3 Morrowind.
Then the games that were also on PC.
Yeah, well,
if it's on PC, does it even matter?
Come on, I don't think it matters.
Like,
Oh, also, it's a Microsoft exclusive.
Also, I'm really glad you vamped for a while because I am finally able to see Voodoo Princess.
You like that stuff.
I do remember this, actually. I do remember Voodoo Vince. I think it was on an Xbox official magazine demo disc 1 year.
Yeah.
1 month.
Yeah.
And I think I did play it there. I fucking love demo discs. And so I'm pretty sure we've talked about this multiple times on the show by now, but it was a hell of a good time.
Yeah.
I don't remember like actually playing the game. But I bet it was fun. But it was a good time.
No, it definitely was. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a fun I don't know why either. But it'll be a fun distraction. That's how I imagine it will be. So look out for Voodoo Vince coming soon. John, were you a fan of Destiny?
Okay. I bought Destiny. Never played it. Didn't even open the package. So I sold it. And I bought it for Xbox One. So I thought, oh, all my friends are on PS4. So like... maybe that's why I didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Legacy Collection was on sale for Black Friday for like $20.
Wow.
And so I bought it.
Yeah.
And this time I opened it. It's right there, over there.
I see it.
On my desk. Yeah. And I opened it, put it in the console, installed it, put it back on the bookshelf, and have yet to play it. I'm probably actually going to sell it for like Mass Effect
instead. Probably a good investment because, as many people have just found out, Bungie has confirmed that character progression will not be carried over from Destiny to Destiny 2.
That's a big fuck you.
On the game's official website, Bungie stated the power, possessions, and Eververse-related items and currency will not make the jump with you. The only thing that will carry over is the aesthetic you've chosen for your guardian if you've reached level 20 and have beaten the Black Garden mission. To put that in perspective, for everyone, that's vanilla Destiny. That's like what I played up to that point, where I'm like, I'm done. So it's the last mission in the game, and it's just the way your character happens to look, like the face structure and all that kind of thing. That's it.
Like the three expansions, the aspects of the game when the game got good, apparently.
Doesn't matter.
So what about all those hours people put into the game?
We'll get to that. You'll understand shortly what you are carrying into Destiny 2. It's very important.
Okay, I'm excited.
Before we get that though, this is an official press release from Bungie. We know that just like us, you have grown fond of the guardians you've created. So we do plan to preserve your character's personalization. We are going to recognize the dedication and passion you've shown for this world, specifically the class, race, gender, face, hair, and marking selections for all characters that have achieved level 20 and completed the Black Garden story mission will carry forward. We also plan to award those veteran accounts with honors that reflect your Destiny 1 accomplishments. In an interview with IGN, Bungie Community Manager David Dagu, I don't know if that's his real name, let's call him Dagu. That's your name now, sir. Attempted to calm the tidal wave of criticism. What we talked about was a relationship with one's character, referring to his own Destiny character in XO with a fondness for dead orbits. I don't know what any of that means.
No, me neither.
These are all emotional pieces of context and I have assigned to my character, and those are all the things that will be relevant in all future versions of Destiny. While I may have my own favorite exotic weapons, that story has changed a great deal over the course of the past 3 years. Deej emphasized that they are fully intend to deliver upon the desire to have a relationship with your character, and that they will always invite players to rethink that relationship and for that relationship to grow more interesting over time, because there are always some new aspects of evolution or learning or mastery that defines that relationship. Destiny 2 is expected to come out sometime in late 2017. Now, the thing is, all he's saying, I'm just going to speak from the heart here.
Is it fuck you? Because that's
I'm not going to say fuck you. I'm just going to say it's kind of bullshit, because it's the Destiny character that you create. He has no personality. He's just there. He's an observer of what's happening. Like, the guy doesn't, there's not that much, like, voice acting for the character, and you kind of just react to things as they're happening to you. That's really it. And mostly it's being mute. And I'm just not really sure. Now, you know, granted, I only played vanilla Destiny, so I don't know too much about the personality of whatever this character is. But from what I played and from what they're going forward with, it's the only thing that's going to count is in vanilla Destiny to the most extent. It's just like, what are you talking about?
Well, let me tell you, Chris, as an experienced player who's bought the games twice.
Yeah, twice. Yeah, good for investment.
For two different consoles. Mm. This is bullshit.
Yeah, it is. Here's the thing. I won't be too much of an asshole. Like, to the people who love Destiny, I think this is a huge disservice to them. I mean, they love that game. They sunk all those hours into it. And I think they should be rewarded for the sequel. I mean, Bungie has talked about Destiny being this 10-year experience. And but you're taking away so much of the experience by not carrying over that progression. So really all you're carrying over is the look of your character, which is like, okay, that's what Mass Effect does. And even then they reward you more because that has the story. That has those character relationships built into the sequel, the second game or the third game, based on all the things you did in those previous games. In Destiny, none of that's there. There is no, I mean, Destiny was criticized heavily for its lack of story, its lack of characters, its lack of a coherent narrative. So I'm just kind of struggling to figure out, like, what about this character that were you so attached to, other than for you kind of making up as you go along? Like, that's what I kind of think of it as. It's just, it's very weird. And I just think it's not fair to those players that love this game and want to continue playing it.
No, yeah, and I think that's very much why it's okay to be an asshole about this situation. Yeah. Because if I was in that situation, I would be livid.
Mm-hmm.
I was sold on this experience that was supposed to last me an entire console generation.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get burned right from the beginning. But then I think Bungie did a good job of kind of fixing their mistakes, mm-hmm. at least making the gameplay much better from other people's experience.
Sure.
Obviously not my own.
Yeah.
We wouldn't know. But they did try, and sure. I think they did continue to improve it, and to just like stop.
Yeah.
And go, nah, we're just going to make a sequel. You're going to buy it too because we're Bungie, which I'll say this right now. I don't like Bungie at all.
I mean, I've
made a couple good games, but nothing that like has touted them as this end-all be-all developer.
I mean, they popularized first-person shooters on consoles with the Halo franchise. I know you're not a fan of it, but I did, and that was a huge part of my gaming experience with the original Xbox and continued on with the Xbox 360. I mean, those are some well-polished games. And you can criticize the story and things like that, and I can understand that, but
there's...
I wouldn't say garbage. There's a lot of interesting world building in that series. There's a lot of cool cultures and history. I mean, I'm all about
that. They don't explore or explain very well. Are you going to say the novels and books that Bungie definitely published, that they definitely wrote themselves?
Well, I was going to say that.
Yeah, I know. I know you were.
We'll just move on. We've been through this. Yeah, we'll just move on from this. So you're excited for the Uncharted game, right, John? The new one, Uncharted: The Lost Legacy.
You mean follow up to my favorite game of 2017?
It was my favorite game
with an asterisk because it's basically.
You mean 2016?
2016 with an asterisk because it's Enter the Gungeon.
Oh, okay. Is it Enter the Gungeon now?
I think.
Jesus Christ! But well, Uncharted.
Chris, the Uncharted game is so fun.
Yeah,
I'm it's sure gonna it be on Switch.
And, oh, is it?
I would probably buy a Switch to play Enter the Gungeon on the
God. Go.
That's my system seller.
Is it?
The Enter the Gungeon? Chris, you got to play it.
Yeah.
You have a PS4.
I'll eventually play it. I do have a PS4. But my favorite game of last year was Uncharted 4 Thief's End. I really enjoyed it. And I'm excited to see the franchise continue on in some form. That's what we're going into here. In the piece published by Game Informer, new details have been revealed about Uncharted: The Lost Legacy, the first Uncharted title not to star the swashbuckling and semi-psychopathic treasure hunter Nathan Drake, but Chloe Frazier and Nadine Ross. And there's just kind of a list of things that the game will include. Chloe and Nadine's relationship will evolve throughout the story, which will be reflected in both story and gameplay. Nadine will play a similar role to Sam in Uncharted 4 in terms of combat, and will be inclined to help Chloe more as she begins to trust her throughout the story. Their conversations will explore their similarities and conflicting views, especially for Nathan Drake, obviously because one fucked him, and the other one tried to kill him. So they're going to have differing views on the guy.
I think Nadine could have fucked him too.
I mean, she could have, but she probably would have killed him.
That's really good.
So apparently, the game will say, they're saying that they're both working together to find an ancient Indian relic called the Tusk of Ganesh, and are competing with a man named Asav, who Nadine has some sort of history with. The game will focus on Chloe's past and half-Indian heritage. Hinduism will also be explored and highlighted throughout the game. It will feature the largest Uncharted level ever, and the most side content for players to discover, including more collectibles, battle encounters, and special dialogue scenarios. There also might be some cameos of other well-known characters from the series. I'm just kind of surprised by just the description of this game, which is, originally I thought it was just going to be like a spin-off title. It'd be like, a couple hours, but like this feels like a whole nother game to a certain extent. You know, like in terms of like the story that they're going to be telling, and in terms of like the levels, that's like, okay, you got my attention.
I will say I'm very confused.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a full game or is it a spin-off? Like, I don't know who in... Naughty Dog's developing it, correct?
Yeah.
Like
this is the last.
Like Naughty Dog, Naughty Dog?
Naughty Dog,
or
Naughty
like
Dog. Yeah.
We put some team on it to make like Jack X.
I believe this is Naughty Dog proper. who's making. This is their last foray. Because, I mean, we knew that there was going to be DLC content or content that would come out after Uncharted 4. We didn't know if that would be, like, tagged on to the game itself, like, as regular DLC, or kind of like a spinoff title. Like, I think in Left Behind, the Last of Us DLC, that was its own separate title. You didn't need to have The Last of Us to play it. And so it kind of falls into this, the same kind of
again, thing. That game was only, what, 2 hours?
I mean, yeah, it's true.
So that is this like a two-hour short experience for $20?
Based on what they're describing, I get the sense that it's going to be longer than 2 hours at least. Well, I think from my impression, probably a 4 to 5 hour experience.
Okay, just me hearing it will feature the largest Uncharted level ever made me think that
open world.
It all takes place in this one little Indian hub.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. Is there a lot to explore? Is this more like Ground Zeroes?
It's, I mean, I don't know if it's Ground Zeroes where you can beat it in 5 minutes or anything like that. But there's stuff to explore. I mean, people kind of got on Ground Zeroes' ass, maybe because it shouldn't have come out because that was
Konami.
Yeah. I don't think that was Kojima's original vision. But there was a lot of content there where you can go back in and really
play the same level over and over
again. No. I mean, there's different side missions throughout that same, like in that large level you can go on. There's challenges and things like that. Maybe that's what kind of what they're talking about in terms of like the side content. But, I mean, if this is from what I get, this kind of sounds to a certain extent like with the Tomb Raider franchise, the direction they're going, where it's just like this massive level you get to explore, you know, and there's like these different kind of sections that then kind of where the story takes place and, you know, and changes like scenes and things like that. I mean, I'm really excited for it. I miss seeing, Chloe in Uncharted 4. I felt that she was, why you gotta do that? She's a classy lady.
Is she? No, she's not. I really like Elena. So
I mean, I like Elena. I like that the fact that we had two very different female characters.
They are strong female characters and like
they're great characters.
Right? I don't mean to demean Chloe, but Elena, my girl. So like you get married to her for a reason. And she likes Crash Bandicoot. I like Crash Bandicoot.
Well, maybe Chloe does too. We don't know.
I think that's
we don't know.
I guess that's true. But I am looking forward to it and them exploring half Indian heritage and stuff like that.
Hinduism.
We've talked about how in the past that we need more exploration of these different cultures that don't really get a spotlight.
Yeah.
Like, a la with Jade Empire or something like that. And so to have a big developer, you know, put the time in and really kind of explore that, I think that's a big step in opening that up in the larger landscape.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't wait. Now, the last news story for the day, we have Middle-Earth Shadow of War. I always said Mordor, almost said it.
Yeah, it's a very bad title.
Gameplay trailer. And this was like an 18-minute long just like section where it kind of follows Talion, the character you play as in the game, him infiltrating or really invading a fortress controlled by these different orc commanders. And what I liked about this particular trailer is just that it showed that there's been an increase in scale for the game since of Mordor, where there's a lot of like different things that you can do and how you're able to like command your orc army and your commanders and how they can interact with other commanders. And I just kind of like that a lot of the game felt vertical, where Shadow of Mordor definitely did that, but this time it's very much going for that, where you're just climbing up these like huge fortresses and trying to, you know, take over this place. I really like that, and I think that the enemy AI looks improved, and I like that each kind of orc commander is very distinctly different from the other. Because after a while, like as you cycle through like orc commanders in the original Shadow of Mordor, they all start to look the same. Here, you get like kind of like troll commanders and like goblin commanders. It's like, okay, this looks really cool, and I'm really excited for it, having been a fan of the first game.
Yeah, I never played the first game, so I thought I'm watching it right now.
Yeah,
and you can see me watching.
Yeah, I know he's watching.
But I thought he was blue. He's not
well. Here's the thing, Talion. He's possessed by a wraith named Celebrimbor, who's like an elven shop.
So silly.
Shut up! It's Lord of the Rings, man.
I've never seen it.
I know.
I love how each week this turns into the show where what famous movie has John not seen?
Yeah.
Although he's been reviewing films, he's on our movie review podcast for like the past 3 years. He's been involved in this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know. It makes me sad every time. But no, what the Talion? He's possessed by a wraith named Celebrimbor, who was one of the forger of the One Ring that Sauron used his attempt to conquer Middle Earth. He is
who is blue. Who is
Celebrimbor? Okay. But he's inside Talion, not in a sexual way.
Yeah, this game does look huge and massive, and and maybe like I don't really feel an urge to play it, maybe because I didn't play the first one.
Yeah,
And maybe we were talking about this with Horizon Zero Dawn and Zelda on my plate, and then Mass Effect.
Yeah.
I kind of have gotten a little interested in seeing what Ghost Recon is all about. And then Persona 5, I ain't got time for anything.
Well, this is coming out in August. So there's some months in between.
Do you really think I'm going to get through Persona 5 and Mass Effect within their respective months? Kingdom Hearts comes out at the end of this month. Will. I'm going to be digging way too much time into that, boy.
Yeah, yeah, we'll see. Oh, but not Kingdom Hearts 3, those fake dream drop colon...
Okay, first
distances
off, Kingdom Hearts 3D Dream Drop Distance, Kingdom Hearts 358 over 2 days.
No. I don't like this.
Mobile spin-off games. That tweet I sent out, was it to Michael?
It was one of our guys.
Okay, on Twitter, where it's just like, I can see Chris's face just the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Just, yeah. You know what? We'll do a Kingdom Hearts podcast.
Oh, no, I mean, like, I didn't need your approval.
And I will sit here like this, looking at the camera.
I didn't need your approval to do that. Oh, we were going to do it.
Oh, of course not. No.
After Mass Effect and after I can get through the entire series, yeah. Then we will have a deep dive as I try to understand what the timeline is and try to explain it to you.
Thank you. And I will be just as confused as I am right now. John, I have something to admit. I was once an adventurer, but I took an arrow to
shut me. The fuck up, please. You know, I didn't really know where that joke starts, so I was not sure whether you were going down that cliched and slightly aggravating road.
It, I mean, that took over the internet for like a month, and everyone started hating it very, very quickly.
It's from Skyrim.
It's from Skyrim,
right?
Yes, okay. Yes.
A game I have not beaten.
But, oh my god, you gotta beat it.
I owned it on 360, is that when it first came out?
Yeah, 360 PS3.
I had it.
Didn't work on PS3.
Yeah, I had it, and then now I have it on PS4 because I didn't get to beat it. Still haven't even touched it. Also, I haven't touched Fallout 4. That's not a lot of time. I ain't got a lot of time.
There isn't. It's
too much internet.
Those games are an investment. But what I like so much about Skyrim was that you can use a bow and arrow. And that is the topic of our main topic today, which is all about bows and arrows. Like, that is one of the best weapons in video games, I think.
It's, yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. It's also one of the most underpowered weapons, and therefore can be slightly aggravating, and I think in games like Skyrim.
Well, it depends on how you use it. It's like one of the
things. Can you use it in Skyrim?
Yeah.
Do you use it in Skyrim?
A bow and arrow? My whole character was an archer. Yeah.
That gameplay ain't great, is it?
Here's the thing, man, and that's what this is what I love about bow and arrows in games. There's multiple ways to use it. So, for example,
you just hit them like a sword.
No. In Skyrim, the way you use a bow is like through stealth. So if you stay hidden, you get like a bonus using the bow and arrow. You get damage times two. So you can take it like a dragon with a single arrow by the time you hit like level 50, and by the time you max out your stealth and like archery. And that's, to me, what I love about the bow and arrow, because there's different ways you can use it within gameplay.
But you hit the dragon once.
Yeah.
And then it knows you're there, though, right?
But you can kill it instantly using the types of as you continue to get more powerful.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
This is
absolutely. That's what I love. But that's what I love about using a bow and arrow.
That's very interesting. Mm-hmm.
And there's plenty of games, actually. Some of my favorite games actually use the bow and arrow as one of the weapons or either as the main weapon. And we just kind of want to get into it again. What I liked about Skyrim is that it improved upon archery from the original Elder Scrolls games. Like in Morrowind and in Oblivion, it was terrible.
No, yeah, it was garbage. It was a garbage fire in Oblivion.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why I never touched it in Skyrim.
Yeah.
So I want to be a lizard who can hit people with swords.
Yeah, that's but kinda it. Here's the thing: they improved upon it, and they kind of included it. Yeah, these things were already in Oblivion, but how you're able to move around, how you're able to control, like just how powerful the arrow is when you're firing it. You know how far you pull back, and then coupling with that stealth mechanic, and and how you're able to upgrade that, and then become more powerful with the bow. It just kind of comes in this like really fun just stealth game all of a sudden where, yeah, you can use swords, you can use magic, but sneaking around using a bow and arrow and picking off your enemies one by one, slowly over time, just racking up all those, those skill points. It's like, oh my god, it's a blast.
But lightning bolt.
You can no. Yes, you can use lightning bolts, but I don't know, for whatever reason, I just always been attracted to archery in video games. Like, I'd say, like, within this, the last generation of consoles and, like, this generation of consoles, and there's been, you know, not just Skyrim, but so many great games that have used bows and arrows.
It's funny because, like, I was the one who, like, initially suggested this topic because there are – I love certain games with the bow and arrows.
Or just say bow and arrow.
Yeah. Bow and arrow. No, bow and arrows.
This is the error part of We Are Error, where we constantly messed up bow and arrow.
Is this episode called They're Bow singular. And Error?
Bow
Please
and arrow.
Tell me.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Good job.
But I realize I like to use bows whenever – like, in an action game, mm-hmm. as a fast action – like basically a gun, but it's a silent gun.
Yeah. That's what's so great about
what
it.
Really inspired this is both of us are kind of putting a lot of time into Horizon Zero Dawn. Mm-hmm. And we'll have finished it by the time you're hearing this.
Yeah.
But it reminded me a lot of how fun this weapon can be. Mm-hmm. But also it's weaker, and so you have to be more tactile with it.
Exactly.
But games like Horizon Zero Dawn don't take away too much power for me. Whereas I feel like in Skyrim I feel weak from the beginning, which I think you are weak at the beginning until, as you say, put a lot of time into it and put a lot of like in developing those skills.
Yeah, exactly.
Through the game's mechanics. Whereas Horizon Zero Dawn, where you start off with the bow and arrow, is kind of where you start off with the bow and arrow later in the game, just based on what kind you have.
One of the great things about that game, it challenges you constantly. And yeah, but I mean, that bow and arrow works well because, yeah, you can apply it when using, like, in stealth, like certain sections. But then you can also use it in regular combat. And there's different types of bows and arrows. Like, here's the one for, like, more short range and the one for long range, which is perfect for stealth options when you're just getting those headshots on those machines or kind of bandit characters throughout the game. And I love that it provides different types of gameplay options to you.
And something that is very Hawkeye-esque is different types of arrows, mm-hmm. which adds a whole nother element to it. And I'm not going to turn this into a Horizon Zero Dawn review because we'll do that later. But it just makes you have to analyze what enemy are you going up against? Mm-hmm. What are they weak against? And you have certain arrows. And I'm just now realizing this as I'm talking, but they make a shotgun out of arrows, technically. And it's really cool now that I think about it. And I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Mm-mm. Well, I mean, not in that type of like a shotgun. I guess it would be a crossbow, maybe to a certain extent, close up.
I guess
not really. I don't know. It I guess it would depend. It always depends on how it's used in combat. But Horizon Zero Dawn is definitely doing something different with that weapon in the games because it is your dominant weapon in the game.
Yeah,
which I think is cool.
Everything that has to do with ropes and wires. That's mm-hmm. really. It finds new and various ways. This is turning into a review.
We'll talk about something else right after.
It uses bow and arrows really good.
It does good stuff.
It does a good job with it.
But then, of course, one of the most famous, I think, series that has used the bow and arrow has been The Legend of Zelda. Mm-hmm. In particular, the ones that I'm thinking of are Ocarina of Time, which was the first 3D Legend of Zelda game. I remember that bow and arrow thinking, this is amazing. Now, at the time, probably the game is a little dated. Mm-hmm. But I think it's been approved upon so much that it's one of the dominant weapons in Breath of the Wild, which I haven't had much time with. None at all, actually. But you have. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you can speak to like
I haven't had actual hands-on experience with it yet because I've been playing Horizon Zero Dawn. Shortly after this recording, I'll probably start getting more hands-on time. But my roommate Trace, who's been on the show a couple times, he's been playing it a lot, and I do see that's a very vital element, at least in the way you go up to an enemy, you're very likely to get your shit fucked up. Like, this game is basically Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Just watching him just like screaming, I died! Mm-hmm. He'll just like hear that through the walls. I'm dead! but so I think a long-range weapon is very vital in those instances.
Yeah.
But you're right. It does. You see the development and how much a bow and arrow kind of like starts to play a better role because the mechanics, I think, been figured out. Mm-hmm. And I know this technically isn't bow and arrows, but Zelda did have a bow and arrow only game at some point.
What was that?
Link's crossbow training.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I remember that. Yeah. No, thank you, Nintendo. But of course, probably one of my other favorite.
Oh, hold on.
Yeah.
Before we move on, I was just thinking. Is the first game has a bow and arrow too that kind of like shoots like a gun?
Yeah, that's
I like it best there.
You like it best there? It shoots like a gun. It's completely opposite of a bow and arrow.
I like when bow and arrows are like guns, silent guns.
Yeah. Well, one other game that to me has really just made the bow and arrow such a central thing in terms of gameplay has been Tomb Raider, the recent Tomb Raider games, and both the 2013 reboot and the Rise of the Tomb Raider. So much so that the bow and arrow is kind of now synonymous with Lara Croft instead of her kind of two pistols. Like, that's been completely replaced. Oh my gosh,
I did forget that.
It has. Like,
she has the bow and arrow on the cover, like,
of both games. Of both games. No, yeah, of the definitive edition, of the regular one from the 2013, and also for Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Oh, she has it in her eyes.
Yep.
Okay, maybe I didn't notice that because she's shooting it in definitive, and it's like at her side in the. Yeah, the regular,
and she has it on her back in Rise of the Tomb Raider. But yeah, I mean, that game, it's the first weapon that you actually get in the game that you use, and you use it for like hunting, and then you kind of move on to kind of more powerful enemies, and it just shows you like, and it introduces like different ammo types that you can use, fire arrows, regular arrows, that kind of thing. And it's the kind of weapon where I kind of just didn't use any other weapons throughout the game until I had to for the achievements, of course, because I love achievements. I love the fact that there was such a great focus on bow and arrow combat and also the stealth stuff again, where you pick off the enemies one by one, whether they be in like a kind of a more forest section or kind of like a more dilapidated like shantytown like section or like kind of these ancient tombs. I loved how just it played with all that and how the bow interacts with the environment, where using your kind of like your flame arrows, you can explode like vents of gas to kill multiple enemies, and you're still able to sneak around. And I just think, again, it's just so cool that they have made the bow and arrow such a central thing to Lara Croft and Tomb Raider.
I think... It's funny. I think Lara Croft in Tomb Raider really uses the bow and arrow beyond a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Not in just the sense in it becomes a key part of puzzles, which is another thing I really do love about bows when they show up in games is because they're much more versatile than guns are. They open up gameplay to, I don't know, I don't know if it's in that game. I think it is, where you can shoot an arrow, it still have it attached to a rope.
Yeah, it introduces that as well. Yeah.
Shooting, like, I know I've seen numerous puzzles, whether in that game or some other sort of game, where your arrow has fire and you need to light something across, but it becomes this whole other puzzle where you've got to figure out how to block water and you've got to balance it off things. And like, that is so genius design in finding, like, to make a weapon become much more than that.
Yeah.
And I think also what, you know, as you were talking about it, what I really think I love about what the bow and arrow starts to become in Tomb Raider is it represents who this person is.
Yeah.
And especially in comparison to the old Lara Croft, where you think about old Lara Croft, two pistols. She's very much this sort of louder type character, at least in design and stuff like that. And, you know, she was meant to be this kind of sex symbol and this hot thing. And I think that's kind of, you know, guns can kind of be played into that as a symbol of power, maybe attaining
masculinity.
Masculinity, attaining a woman like that is a symbol of power in certain circumstances to certain people. Whereas when I see the bow and arrow and I see this new Lara, I think much more wit and I think agile, maybe a little underpowered, but used correctly, it is one of the most powerful.
A survivor. Like that's what that's those games are all about.
That's probably why the bow and arrow has become so center in cover art and in gameplay, is because it's sort of about the overall repackaging of who Lara Croft is, and it's so brilliant and such a subtle thing that I don't think you might miss from the first pass, but like when you really start to think about it, it's like this is who Lara is now, and I think the series and the character is much better off for it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
And I'm really excited to see it in the new game or in the new movie with Alicia Vikander just like kicking ass with the bow and arrow. That seems so cool.
Yeah. So what other kind of a games do you think?
Obviously, I'm going to go to another action game and a game that, you know, I'm almost making this a Horizon Zero Dawn review again.
This is the review. This is how it is. This is how we feel about it.
But when I was playing that game, I thought a lot about Far Cry. Far Cry 3, 4. I didn't play much Blood Dragon, although Blood Dragon is right up my alley.
That's got to be a retro review, man.
I've listened to the soundtrack for Blood Dragon more than I've played the game. But yeah, Far Cry 3 and 4 is when I really started to love bows and arrows.
Yep.
That was bad. These are just like bows. Just bows. I'm just going to call them bows. When I started to use that weapon, because, again, it becomes this versatile thing that has power to it. It's not used so much as like it is used for stealth, but it doesn't feel underpowered. As like I said, my first experiences were kind of with Skyrim or Oblivion, where I felt like it was so underpowered. Why use it?
It was.
Where in Far Cry, it's basically the best weapon. It is the best weapon because a lot of my time in that game, I love to just like when I'm raiding outposts, mm-hmm. that was my favorite part. Is yeah. because to kind of scan the area, pinpoint where everyone is, and to be able to just headshot everyone with yeah. an arrow and turn off the alarm. I got it.
Oh, I know. It's so great. Yeah, again, but that's incorporating that stealth gameplay with the game.
But something about it didn't feel like, I think my problem is a lot of times in stealth games, I mm-hmm. feel like I can't handle myself if I'm caught. Mm-hmm. Whereas Far Cry, because of the way the other mechanics are already set up,
yeah.
I don't feel as much risk and reward.
Sure.
Which, you know, in games like Tomb Raider, it helps to develop the character, and I think it is necessary mm-hmm. that it feels that way. Whereas in Far Cry, where it's so loud and brash, especially like Voss and those characters,
yeah, I love it.
In particular, that there's no real need to be so subtle
mm-hmm.
because there's it would be a tonal clash
yeah.
the rest of the game.
In those certain sections, you don't necessarily need to be subtle. Sometimes I think it's a good mix of different gameplay styles. You can yeah. be super violent, super loud, or in some cases, very quiet.
Yeah, so, but I still like that. Feel that power.
Yeah, you always feel powerful.
Key about yeah. Far Cry
yeah.
in my enjoyment of the bow and arrow experience mm-hmm. in Far Cry.
Mm-hmm. Now, something that probably, if you have any other thoughts on the Far Cry games, you should definitely need to play good. 4 and definitely need to play
Blood Dragon. I have played 4. I've played 3
oh, you have?
4. Blood okay. Dragon is the only one I have. I've yeah. only played a couple hours, but that was at the end of the S3's life cycle, and I was like moving on yeah. to the new console.
No, I get it. I get it. Oh, and one of the other great things about it is that you can upgrade like the bow and arrow and make it more powerful, give it like a different reticule and yes. things like that, yeah. which I love that.
I love adding little tweaks to just this simple yeah. piece of wood and mm-hmm. string.
Yeah, it becomes like a super weapon. But one game that doesn't even make you feel very powerful when you are using the bow and arrow is The Last of Us, and how it's kind of used throughout the game and used by particular characters too. It's the weapon that I associate with Ellie for most of the parts. Actually, I think it's the weapon that you open up with when you go hunting during the winter section of the game. Mm-hmm. And I think in that case, that is it makes sense of Ellie because that's at her most vulnerable state, I think. You know, really, yeah, in the entire game, and how there's almost like a desperation through her use of the bow and arrow. Like when you first see her, she's hunting for a deer and she loses it. And really the only time you're ever using the bow and arrow is when you're, again, being very quiet. You're trying to avoid the clickers or these human enemies because you can get one shot off and you can kill them silently, but say if you hit them in the arm or whatever, they will come after you and the bow becomes useless.
Yeah.
Throughout the game. And I think that's interesting where it's very much, I mean, that game in general is about taking power away from you, making you feel constantly vulnerable. And it's a very visceral, violent game for the entire time. It has its moments of quiet, but in terms of combat, it's always very, very violent. And it makes you feel just kind of, I wouldn't say weak, but just vulnerable.
It very much becomes a risk-reward thing in that sense, too. Last of Us never makes you feel powerful.
No,
you always feel weak. So to take even more away from you with those bow and arrow sections, it's a lot. And you're right. It really works tonally.
Yeah.
Again, it's an element where the bow and arrow becomes a part of the character. Mm-hmm. It says a lot about the character, and their state of emotion at that point in time. Where you're right, Ellie is very vulnerable. She's obviously very weak and kind of.
Weak in terms of like, her combat ability.
Yeah, combat ability. Yeah, yeah. And in some case, primitive, mm-hmm. I think, is another thing that the bow and arrow really gets across. Because is that before she really starts using guns? Or she's because she's.
I mean, throughout the game, she's being trained by Joel to use guns, but I think that she had previous experience. I mean, Joel used the bow and arrow as well. But it's the weapon that I associate with Ellie because that's the one I see her.
I think it fits more too in that winter section.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Where it's all about just fear and underpoweredness and like having to choose your battles mm-hmm. in a sense too. Again, it's just, I love when the bow and arrow is used as a narrative piece.
Yeah.
And I think another example that I had kind of written down, was Shadow of the Colossus. It's basically useless.
I knew you put that in there.
If you didn't write it, obviously put it in there. Because it was one of those games. When I think bow and arrows, I've also really started to think about horseback riding. Maybe that's because I think about Link with it, and you can do that in Horizon Zero Dawn mm-hmm, as well. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what other game am I thinking about? And it was Shadow, where, you know, you can kind of hit the colossi in a very particular area with a bow. It doesn't really have much of an effect, though.
Mm-hmm.
And you really think about Wander and his little horse up against these towering colossi in your little bow and arrow that isn't going to work. It shows how weak you are and how mm-hmm. you have to think more creatively to make these beasts fall. And I think that's what the bow and arrows usually cause the player to do, is they make you really think more creatively and more out of the box. And, you know, you have to find your power from a different source other than this inanimate object. Mm-hmm. And I think that really shows how powerful this weapon can be, and maybe why not every game really needs one or is able to use it, because you have to have a distinct purpose to it. Mm-hmm. Where it makes the developers really start to think out of the box, like, how can we use this? How can we make this feel as useful yeah. as modern weaponry, and in some cases even more so? And that's why I think in Shadow, that feeling of just belittlement and just having to, like, the first time you shoot an arrow at a Colossi, and it's yeah. just like, well, fuck, what? Like, what, no, the, that's not what am I going to do?
In that case, it's used more as a tool than a weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why it works. And another game that when I think of when I first used like a bow and arrow in a video game, other than Ocarina of Time, that was like third person. But for first person games, it was Turok Evolved.
I wrote that down too.
You did? Okay, cool.
Well, I wrote Turok. And I also put, not good, but it's got one.
No, but it sticks out in my mind because I remember playing that game because it introduced all of those different arrow types. And where the one I use constantly is the poison arrows. And when you shoot the poison arrow at someone, they would, you know, and it hits them, they would constantly get sick and like vomit up everything that they had and like, you know, their intestines or whatever and be like, oh, and I just watch them through the little kind of scope through because it has like a super scope for the bone arrow, because of course it does. It's the future, and it's on a dinosaur planet. But that's just one of my earliest memories of that game. It always stuck out to me because that's all I did, like the first like two levels, was just make people sick.
I think it's really funny that this show has mentioned Turok twice in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I bet that's a record somehow.
I think it is the record. It's like, the most it's ever been mentioned.
Can we please stop talking about Turok?
And the 2008 game, I think, also had a bone arrow. It,
that one was more like this modern sort of yes. piece of metal, which still, I think, like, even in that, which I don't think it's used very well, it's more like yeah. a weaker gun. I think it was somewhere similar to Crysis. Crysis 3.
Yeah, that's one of the games I was thinking of, but I just didn't have as much experience of Crysis than some of the other titles.
It's good. Like, yeah. It's fine. I think it's
poor
just,
man's Halo. Yeah.
It's more, hey, you get to be invisible.
Yeah.
Oh. Can you be invisible in Halo?
Yes.
Oh. I guess you're right.
I got one.
Yes, you're right.
There. my microphone's blocking my finger.
But it feels very much that same thing, like Crysis and Turok.
Yeah.
At least the 2008 version? Mm-hmm. 2006. Okay.
2000. It's around there. It's the one that is the 2000.
Touchstone.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
But yeah, it feels more as just like, I don't know, another gun that you can use, but there's no real addedness to it.
Sure.
I don't know, because it doesn't feel very underpowered either in any mm-hmm. sort of sense. And there's no real excuse for my, you know, somewhat limited experience with Crysis. I did beat the second one all the way through, though, for some reason. That, like, it just feels like another gun, in a sense. And it doesn't really feel like that they really thought about how best to use this.
It just doesn't stand out like in all these other games that we mentioned, where it is such a central, whether it be a weapon or a tool, it just happens to be another weapon in the game. It's like, yeah, you can use this, but you don't have to.
Yeah, and, you know, for fear of totally coming out of standstill here, but have you ever played a Thief game as someone who really loves stealth?
I played the original Thief games back in the day, but the one you're probably thinking of is the most recent one, Four. I mean, it's not called Thief 4, it was just called Thief. And it used the bow and arrow. I mean, that game just isn't good overall. There's a lot of things that are wrong with it. I mean, the story makes no sense. It's not particularly, it's hard to control the character, but the bow and arrow mechanic is fine. In there, it's used more as a tool where you have like water arrows where you can like, you know, put out like torches. You can go into the shadows and things like that. Yeah, you can kill people with it and all that. But for most of the game, you don't try to kill people throughout it. So you use it only in certain cases. So that's why it doesn't stand out in my mind, you know. For me.
Wait, so is it not in the first?
It is. It is in the other games, but I mean,
It's more used to...
I've played them, yeah.
Hit out lanterns or something.
Exactly. It's not really used for combat, because that's not the purpose of Thief. That's not what you're playing Thief for.
Okay. Do you have any others, any final ones? Because I have one that is, I think is the single best use of bow and arrows in the history of video games.
I do not. That was one of the last ones.
Towerfall.
I played Towerfall. That's for PS4. Is that the only platform it's on?
I think
it's coming to the Xbox.
PC. Technically, you can play Ascension on Vita since it has a single-player campaign.
Oh, I didn't even know I had single-player.
But the reason you need to play Towerfall is for local couch co-op, mm-hmm. where it is better than Smash Brothers.
Wow.
I'm going to say it's better than Smash Brothers.
And
I've had a limited amount of time, really, with it. I've played maybe 3 hours.
Well, the Nintendo fans are going to come for your head now, John.
explain yeah. the Switch decisions, my friends.
Yeah, got you there.
But yeah, just Towerfall is like oodles and oodles of fun. And they do add these things where it's like you can have fire arrows or these arrows that kind of multiply if mm-hmm. they miss. Or they even have, in certain levels, they have little lanterns in the background. And if you whiff past, like, if you miss your enemy yeah. and you whiff past the lantern, it's so cool to watch that little 8-bit sprite just like, phew.
What stands about that game is, yeah, you have the different ammo types, like you said. You have bomb arrows as well. Mm-hmm. You have barbed arrows, which can kind of create like this.
Do they create like vines, right?
They create vines, like vines of like spikes that come out, and if you rub up against them or whatever, then you die, yeah. and things like that. I like how the levels are like continuous, where if you shoot an arrow up and there's like a pit, it keeps coming back down until it hits the other player yeah. or yourself. Like you can kill yourself with your own bow and arrow, which I don't think many games do that. Like I can, maybe there's something where if you shoot the arrow up and you wait for it to hit you, maybe it does do you damage, but that's what I think about that game. It's like the bow and arrow, it's useful, but it's also a detriment at the same time, which I think is really, really cool and fun.
Yeah, can you do that in Skyrim?
Maybe. I never done that to myself because why would I? But I wouldn't be surprised if that is the case.
But you're right about Towerfall, and it makes me think about something else that the bow and arrow does mm-hmm. that guns don't really do, except maybe in Battlefield. They have this sense of momentum and
yeah.
a path.
Yeah.
I know in Horizon specifically. I keep bringing that game up. In Horizon, when I shoot an arrow, and I feel like I control it a little bit at the end, yeah. but you can see it kind of curve mm-hmm. right at the end. Where I think before, where the curve actually got me the headshot, and I felt so cool.
Yeah.
Where I think that's such a vital element of how it's used in Towerfall, because you're right about if you shoot it straight down, it's going to...
Yep.
But if you angle it just a little bit, it'll move over to the wall, and eventually like hit the wall, ding, like knock off. And I just love that kind of attention to detail mm-hmm. that I think bow and arrows add. Again, you know, Battlefield does take into account like wind and stuff, but I think Towerfall uses it best.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the thing overall about bow and arrows is that every shot you take is usually, it's your fault if it hits or misses.
Yeah, it's very user controlled.
Yeah.
And it feels like an extension of you. Is where a gun feels less, you know, mm-hmm. elemental.
I mean, you're firing so many rounds off that, you're going to hit something, but then you always got to pull back. It's yep. always that risk and reward thing with the bow and arrow, which to me just overall makes it such a satisfying weapon to use.
Yeah. We need a Hawkeye game. That's all I guess.
We do need a Hawkeye game. Hawkeye needs something. You know, he's not very interesting in the films, you know.
What if he's in the Avengers?
Comics are okay. He might be.
He could be.
He could end up being the best character.
And Square Enix makes Tomb Raider, right?
The publisher of it, yeah. So, Crystal Dynamics.
Huh?
Nope, that's what it is. You gotta do that.
I used to be an adventurer like you, and I took an arrow in the knee.